It's 8:17. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Summit County Council continues their budget deliberations. In the studio with an update, Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
The council meeting tomorrow and work session at 2:45 at the county courthouse in Colville. General discussion on the proposed budget and a special projects discussion on a few issues. There were no staff notes here for background. So let's talk a little bit about what's the budget plan then for the rail trail.
So one of the things that the council is considering within the budget is whether to put some money towards probably out of our transient room tax source of funding towards kind of a study and an implementation plan to enhance the rail trail to be more than what it is today. Certainly it is a great trail connection between the Echo area and Park City, but it has, our staff and members of the community have identified a lot of possibilities of ways to use the trail to really provide an economic development tool connecting our east and west sides of the county and our economic engine here in Park City with the Wanship, Colville, Hoytsville, Echo areas. So we'd like to explore that. There's some interest in exploring that. We've talked to the state parks about that as well, and they would be interested in that also. So it's a possibility.
So are we talking about paving the trail?
That could be one of the possibilities. Mm-hmm. Right now the trail is used by everything from bicycles to horses, hikers, all that type of activity. Maybe paving a portion of it and leaving a portion of it for a soft trail for equine use would be a thing that we could explore. Just a lot of different possibilities to see if we can increase the use of that trail between our communities.
Get the spring chicken in open.
Well, something like that, certainly.
Yeah. Also, talking about a trail along State Road 32 in South Summit?
Yeah, so the South Summit Trails Group received one of our grants over the last year to do some environmental background work on the remaining portion between about the Marion area to Camas. To finish that trail. I'm not exactly sure where they're at in that process, but the council has expressed interest in completing that trail between Camas and Marion. So if we do want to explore that, again, we could use the transient room tax source on something like that. Probably some more background work would be needed in 2019 to develop that project. Looking ahead into 2020 or 2021 as an actual construction year, if we decide to pursue that.
Yeah, so when we look at these two projects, I mean, what kind of budget impact are we talking about for the rail trail and the...
Well, that's part of what we're trying to figure out at this point, is what would be the magnitude of a larger project that would actually get into construction and development. We're not at that point to know those dollar amounts yet or the time constraints on that. So that's really what these first years of study would be about.
Yeah. You could also use the sales tax dollars, no, for transit?
Certainly could. I think the council will be looking at all of our sources that are available for, certainly could use general fund for those types of things too. But, some of our funds have a lot more competition in them than others. So that's what the council will be discussing.
So all of that TRT money, I mean, that was the new negotiation with the Chamber Bureau to bring more money, and I thought that was all going towards the fairgrounds, no?
It has not gone off towards the fairgrounds. We've used a combination of transient room tax and restaurant tax fund balance for the fairgrounds. So there are still fund balances in both available. I think the council is looking at these current proposals and seeing what the best fit will be for the funds.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, the rail trail, of course, is a state park. And of course, they're saying, sure, go ahead. Yeah. But it's one thing to build the trail. It's another to maintain it.
Absolutely. And so, one of the things that certainly would be part of a feasibility study would be looking at how can we develop that to its highest potential while still having something that doesn't over impact us in the maintenance part of that or the operation of it over time. I don't believe our desire is to take that trail from state parks. I think we'd rather it stay a state park and link, actually provide a link between two state park areas, and that be part of the attraction of it. Those are going to be all things that are going to be discussed if we do get into that study.
Okay. And so is this what that discussion is about tomorrow, about whether or not we move forward?
Whether we put some dollars towards that and start to work with state parks in that way.
Okay. And one other special project is the connection between Chalk Creek and Mirror Lake. Are we moving forward with
this? I saw that in the staff report. I don't think we're going to have a long discussion about that. I think the last couple of months have brought some clarity to the council that they really don't want to move forward with that at this point. So unless there's a large public contingent that comes in just banging on the table to move forward with that, I doubt that one will move forward.
All right. And then also a discussion with the grants to nonprofit organizations. We had heard from Doug Clyde that you're backing away, actually, from the earlier recommendation to not fund any nonprofits for 2019 due to the grant given to the Children's Justice Center. So where do things stand at this point?
So the council certainly wanted a recommendation based on what we were learning about revenues as they got more clear throughout the year. There is a revenue source, and I'm not going to be able to name it exactly this second, but it has to do with how we budgeted for health insurance this year. That has come in a little better. The cost of that has come in a little better than we expected. So a lower cost, which has allowed some other revenues to be available. So with that discussion, the council asked, and I provided them a recommendation several weeks ago around the nonprofits and youth recreation line items. And so they're going to be considering those as part of the discussion this week.
All right. Is there a recommendation for which nonprofits?
There is. And that it has been amended in the staff report as of yesterday. So it is available.
All right. And then the youth recreation program, this is for North Summit?
This is for North Summit and South Summit. We've been, in the 2018 budget, we took out a contribution for recreation to the Snyderville Basin area. And it has been the desire of the council to slowly wean the recreation areas off of general fund monies supporting that. So we're recommending a reduction in funding from the 2018 year, and we'll see how the council reacts to that.
Okay. We should note again, not too late. You've got, what, three more meetings before the budget.
So today is the last really big discussion meeting, and we'll hammer out some of these remaining items that we've been collecting over the last few weeks. And then the public hearing portion starts. So on the 5th will be the first public hearing at the Richens Building. And then the second public hearing and consideration of adoption will happen in Colville on the 12th.
Okay. Let's see. Concerning the discussion regarding Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante Monuments, the county giving input to the Bureau of Land Management on the resource management plan for these two areas. The council had previously signed some amicus briefs opposing efforts to reduce the monument sizes. The staff report suggests that the county is adopting recommendations from the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. So what does that look like?
Well, I mean, essentially what's happening is that the council has been very active in this discussion the whole time. I mean, and especially since the current administration signed the executive order to reduce the size of the monuments. The council really believes in the value of our public lands, of maintaining the wilderness values that are there, maintaining the value around protecting the archaeological sites and things like that. And, they believe that this helps our economy. The tourism that these areas receive those folks also visit Park City, and they also visit Summit County. They visit a lot of places in the state. And so the tourism economy that our economy is based on is what happens with these areas is vital to that. So that's the connection they make.
Okay. Basically, they support the cultural and recreational values on the land as opposed to the development energy extraction.
I would say that's fair. Yep.
Okay. Closer to home, the council's looking at some BLM lands here in Summit County. One issue involves oil and gas leases. Where are these?
Well, these, I just looked at the map this morning to get clarity on that. They are in the absolute far eastern side of the county. It's almost into Daggett County. But it actually, the BLM lands straddle and the lease areas straddle the two counties. So that's what we're talking about. There's a few parcels up there that are being made available, and that's one of the discussion items with the local managers of the BLM lands.
All right. Being made available what? For exchange, for purchase?
I think just general lease for extraction. I don't know much more about it than that. We'll hear from them this tomorrow.
All right. And then a second issue involves a couple of parcels. My understanding, they could be on the Extel property in Wasatch County, near Wasatch County, but close to Summit County.
Yeah, there's some it does have to do with some of the Deer Valley expansion, I believe, in looking at the map. So those lands will be discussed as well. I don't know much more about that either.
All right. An ordinance amending the Snyderville Code to allow food trucks and food courts. No public hearing was noted. Is the council ready to make a decision
on
this?
So the public hearing was already opened, and I don't remember whether it was closed or not. I don't think it was. Usually the council leaves those open if they're going to discuss it again. Really what the discussion around this was largely around items that were more answerable by the health department and public health. So they're going to be present at the meeting on Wednesday to answer some of the council's questions about bathrooms and how food truck businesses relate to regular storefront restaurants. So.
Yeah, that's certainly the concern I know here in town. I mean, people paying property taxes on their brick and mortar places, and how does that?
Yeah, and you know, the legislature weighed in on that this last year and told us that food trucks were going to be allowed, and gave us some leeway in regulating that, and that's what we're reacting to now.
Yeah. Trash, I know, is also a concern here in Park City. I mean, you guys feel like you have a plan.
Certainly heard the story that was just done previously before I came in. Our ordinances do deal with trash, and those businesses will have to deal with their own trash. They will not be allowed to just they can build relationships with local businesses if they want, but they can't just leave it there.
All right. Let's see. A public hearing and possible action for the Trumpeteers Place subdivision. This is a proposal, I believe, for 5 1-acre residential lots in Hoytsville?
In Hoytsville. It's a property that has two structures on it already. Those would come off and lots would be sold. It's a fairly typical development for Hoytsville Road, a cul-de-sac with 5 lots, 1-acre lots on it.
All right. And this is, I think, in the area that was proposed for the town of Hoytsville.
It is. If that would have incorporated, these would have fallen in within that area. This application was submitted before the new code was adopted, so it falls under the previous rules. So it seems like from the staff report that the staff is recommending that the Planning Commission has recommended approval. So we'll see how the council feels about that.
Okay, I mean, we've talked about this before. Just the access to the main road, just one cut as opposed to 5 cuts. At the same time, we only have one in and one out.
That's true. However, it cul-de-sacs, and if they don't violate a certain length, they don't have to have the second access. So that's what the provisions in the code are for, and the fire districts have been part of that process as well.
Okay. Anything else, Tom?
I have nothing else at this time.
All right. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
That's Summit County Manager Tom Fisher again. The Summit County Council meeting tomorrow and work session starting at 2:45 at the County Courthouse in Colville. You're listening. It's 8:32. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. The Alfangen Ski Museum at Utah Olympic Park will unveil three updated exhibits today. In the studio with details, I have the museum's director, Connie Nelson. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, the unveiling taking place at 11:30. The public is welcome there at the museum. So these aren't new exhibits, but they'll feel new?
Yes, they feel really new. They are totally new exhibits, especially the Alfangen trophy case. The name of our namesake for our museum located at Utah Olympic Park is Alfangen, and he immigrated from Norway in 1929, and he had already achieved a great success as a ski jumper and soccer player. And then when he moved to Utah, he continued as a ski jumper and a star player in soccer, which some people don't know. But we have a vast collection of his awards and trophies that span over half a century. And they represent regional, national, and international championships. And we have updated this exhibit completely with new lighting and a totally new case. And we're really excited to have Alan and Barbara Ingen come and give a little talk about that. And another Norwegian that we redid his case, and we've actually put him in a feature case at the exit of the museum. And this is Stein Eriksen, another Norwegian, known as the father of freestyle skiing. And we celebrate all that he has brought to not only America, but, Park City, Utah. So, folks, and we have a video going that was donated by Deer Valley. And it's really interesting. Folks, now it's fun for me to see these two exhibits in particular, where folks used to just walk by the trophy case. Now we have an interactive component where you can push a picture of a trophy on an interactive screen, and up pops the whole story. So we use that with our education, and people really enjoy that. And the Stein Eriksen exhibit, folks really enjoy watching the video of him doing his forward flip and how he, was in Aspen and Sun Valley and then Park City Mountain and now Deer Valley. So we're really proud to have Stein in our museum. And then, Leslie, we also updated our Hometown Heroes exhibit and now include the PyeongChang 2018, a few of our heroes here, and how we get the criteria for that, for them to be in our Hometown Heroes, are people who have grown up here in Park City in this area and have trained at the facilities, our Olympic facilities, and have used them and are now and then went into the Olympics. So we are featuring silver medalist Keith Gable, who's a Paralympian, and he won the silver in snowboard cross. And our local favorites, Sarah Hendrickson. She earned a spot in the 2018 U.S. Olympic ski team. And this is her second Olympic appearance, so we have a case representing her. And of course, Ted Ligety. He just spells out the hardest working alpine skier and born and bred here in Park City, and we're proud to have him in our Hometown Heroes. And half-pipe skier, Britta Signori, she actually won a bronze in PyeongChang Games, and we have a special case for Lindsay Van. Now, she played a vital role in getting women's ski jumping approved for the Olympic events, and we have her her exhibit there showing her with Alfangen in 1996. She's a little girl, and she had just finished jumping the K90 sitting next to Alf. And so we have her 2009 World Championship medal, our trophy, which is amazing, and her bib and her outfit. And we'd love to have people come and check them out.
Yeah, so you do have new stuff, it sounds like.
Oh yeah, it's actually all new except for the trophies, but it's in new cases, but it's remodeling it.
Yeah, so how much money did you spend remodeling?
Oh, that's a great question. We started out with a budget of around, I think, $50,000. And then as we added the interactivity, it came out for all three exhibits about $75,000. But our board is very exact in that we only put in what we can afford. And so we wait till we raise all the money. And we thank, the Ingens and the Durhams and Summit County Wrap Tax and Park City Foundation. and let's see, Park City Rotary. And, you know, we get these donations and these grants, and then we're able to do these things. And we're really welcoming everyone at 11:30. We'll have a little program at 12 in the theater at Utah Olympic Park. And then we have light appetizers and some drinks for folks to go and enjoy the three remodeled new exhibits.
All right. So do you have room for future exhibits? Or have you tapped out here?
Oh, my gosh. What a great another one. So what we're doing at the unveiling, we actually have our exhibit designers, Unrivaled out of Ogden, coming with some concept plans, which we've been reviewing over the past year. And we want to redo, and we have concept plans to redo the second half of the museum. When you walk into our museum, we've done little exhibit. We've done each exhibit each year. So we started with the entrance and then the virtual ski ride, and then the ski jump, and then weather exhibit last year, then Alf Ingen trophy case. And then when you look at the second half of the museum, it all needs to be redone, the topo map, the avalanche, and we have some fabulous concept plans. Of course, it's $1 million. So this will be our capital campaign, but these will be all interactive and state-of-the-art with incredible, like the avalanche and a holograph. So really interesting and interactive, and a table where we can get, it's like a big computer. I'm sure you've probably seen these in other museums, but you can push it and you can up will pop, you know, the history of freestyle, and you can go right into the past, you know, 70s with Bob Theobald and, you know, Clendenine, all the different people that have made freestyle what it is.
So do you have the millions saved, or is that something you need to
raise? No, now we're raising. So that's our next big project.
So when do you think you'll be able to?
Our goal is 2 years, so we're open to anybody who wants to put their name on it, and anybody listening, if they'd like to step up to the plate and put a matching grant, we're going to try to get that going this year.
Yeah, now I think all of the exhibits you mentioned, the three new unveiling ones, are free, right? I mean, it's
Yeah.
So there is a paid portion that you...
Yeah, it's free to enter both the Alf Ingen Ski Museum and the 2002 Olympic Museum upstairs. But we do have a virtual component where folks sit on a quad chair and they can experience a bobsled ride, a virtual bobsled, a virtual speed flying off Mount Superior across from Snowbird. We have a powder run at Alta, and we also have a mountain bike ride that we filmed up at Deer Valley on Tidal Wave. And then that's $5 for one of those. And then they can also ski jump free of charge. And that's a virtual ski jump off our K-120. And folks love that. Leslie, we've had over 500,000 guests last year through the museum. So we've really hit the map, and Utah Olympic Park is a great partner in getting everybody up to the two museums. And come up and check out the new exhibits free of charge.
Yeah. Is there a most popular exhibit?
Yes, there is. They love the bobsled, the virtual bobsled, because a lot of people go out and see it, and then they come back in and try it. And they don't have to get cold.
Okay. I think you're open every day, yeah?
7 days a week, mm-hmm. And open from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Our virtuals are open from 10 a.m. till 5 p.m.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
No, thanks to all the public, and thanks for having me on today, and we'll see you out there.
Okay. Connie Nelson, again, the director of the Alf Ingen Ski Museum. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the Alpine World Cup returned to North America for Thanksgiving weekend. In the studio with an update on the Killington and Lake Louise Alpine World Cups, I have Communications Director for U.S. Ski and Snowboard, Tom Webb. Hi.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. So you got to go back for the World Cup in Killington. Looks like there was plenty of snow and cold.
Yeah, plenty of snow, plenty of cold, and plenty of people. Over 30,000 people over the weekend turning out to watch the fantastic action, and it really was a great weekend. Obviously, topped off on Sunday with Michaela Schifrin's third win in a row there in the slalom. She was fourth on Saturday, but that didn't dampen any of the enthusiasm. It was a spectacular weekend, not just for Michaela as well, but for Nina O'Brien and a number of the other athletes who had a spectacular time on the snow there. It really is a great event. And anybody that wants to see World Cup action, I urge you strongly, think about booking next year.
Yeah. And when we say 30,000 over the weekend, I mean, That's small, though, in comparison to the crowds we get in Europe, no?
I wouldn't say it's small. We had about 18,500 on Saturday and about 15,000 on Sunday. And while the numbers may be slightly less than in some of the big events, like in Kitzbühel, for example, which is generating tens of thousands of people, one of the really pleasing things, I think, for everybody involved in that event is the reaction of the athletes to those crowds. Every single athlete that comes down the mountain is getting the same volume of cheers, which may be a little surprising for somebody like Michaela, but all of the athletes talk about what an amazing atmosphere it is, and that's generated by some incredibly passionate people who stand out there for hours on end, ringing their cowbells and cheering loudly for everybody. So maybe the numbers are slightly less, but the atmosphere is definitely right up there.
Yeah. So is Killington kind of a permanent stop, or is that just done a decision every year?
No, it's a stop that's on the calendar for a long time. It does take quite a while for the gears of the International Ski Federation to grind through changes, but I think with something as successful as Killington, I can't see any change in that for the near or long-term future.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Sunday's slalom actually a really good sign for U.S. women.
Yeah, I think in particular seeing three women getting points, that is something that is obviously extremely pleasing for everybody involved in the coaching of the team. But it's also important to note that we're looking very long-term with the Alpine team. There is a project called Project 26, which is focused very heavily on pipeline and grassroots development and bringing the next generation of athletes through. So while I think it was extremely satisfying to see such strong performances this weekend, I think that we'd like to think that the real measurement will come over the next decade or so.
All right. At 24 years old, Michaela Schifrin, 45 World Cup wins already. I mean, she at this rate, she's going to blow by Ingemar and Lindsey Vonn. If she does make it, she doesn't sound like she's going to keep that record for very long.
Well, very firmly knocking on wood and crossing everything that she remains injury free. I do think that's one of the things that she has been remarkably good at. She trains as hard as any athlete I've ever worked with anywhere in the world, if not harder. She obviously has bags of natural talent that are enabling her to do something which is truly extraordinary. I think it's worth bearing in mind that she is obviously incredibly good at slalom and at giant slalom, but she's headed straight to Lake Louise now for the speed events there. She was asked at an event last year whether or not she is ultimately a speed racer. And she had this kind of wry smile on her face and said, yeah, I am. And, you know, you look at somebody like Michaela and you think what she's doing is actually equivalent, for example, to if you take Usain Bolt. Usain Bolt won the 100 and 200, dominated in those kind of sprint events. If he could then step up to win a 1500 and distance events as well, that is what Michaela is doing. So she can win those tech events and she can dominate in those. And then she's able to step up. Last year, she won the Lake Louise women's downhill event. Who knows if she'll be able to register the same performance this year. But she really is an extraordinary athlete that is transcending her sport.
Yeah. And the men were up in Lake Louise. I mean, the photos are that place are just spectacular.
It is a beautiful, beautiful venue. My predecessor at US Ski and Snowboard, Tom Kelly, one of the very first pieces of advice he gave me was make sure you get yourself up to Lake Louise. It is an amazing venue. I haven't been lucky enough to do that yet. But yeah, our men had an extremely good start to the season. We went out to Copper Mountain a couple of weeks ago to go and meet with the men's Alpine team and have a few chats with them ahead of the season. And to see Steve Nyman and Bryce Bennett both breaking into the top 20, and that was something spectacular. And then followed up with Ryan Cochran-Siegel's result 12th on the Sunday. That was even better. RCS, a lot of the people in the team have looked at him and have said he is in really, really good form. And as we head to Beaver Creek this coming weekend for the second World Cup event on US soil, we're hoping for good things. I don't think anybody wants to jinx anything, but I think with such a strong performance for the men's team up in Lake Louise, hopefully the crowds that are going to come out to Beaver Creek are going to have something really amazing to cheer for.
Okay, what happened with Ted in the Super G?
You'd have to ask Ted about that. My focus was very firmly on Killington, I'm afraid.
Okay. Let's see. Cross-country team, what have we got going on there?
So cross-country team started out in Ruka, Finland. It was a good result for Sadie Bjornsson. She started the season really well. Their World Cup season obviously is now in full swing, and I think one of the things that that team is looking to do is firmly looking at the World Championships that are in February next year. You know, with the amount of physical energy that is expended in cross-country skiing, as everybody who's listening to this who has any view or knowledge of cross-country skiing knows, it is not just about outright performance, it's about managing your performance levels. So I think while maybe the results for the whole team aren't quite matching those that, for example, Michaela's registering, I think they have a very clear plan of where they want to expend that those energy levels, and they're building up and very firmly looking towards those World Championships in February. So a good start to the weekend. One question we are getting quite a lot is about where people could watch that on TV. Unfortunately, NBC weren't able to do a deal with the Finnish Federation to broadcast the races in Ruka. But for the forthcoming events outside Finland, people will be able to tune in and watch on NBC.
Okay. Also had some good results there at the World Cup Slopestyle.
Yeah, we both had results in Stubai and out in Beijing, where we had the Aaron Style Snowboard Big Air World Cup. That took place in the Bird's Nest Stadium in Beijing, which I was actually lucky enough to be in for the 2008 Olympic Games. It is an amazing venue. Chris Corning there, one of our team members, has put himself very firmly into second place in the World Cup standings with a decent result there. It was a busy weekend, but a good weekend overall, I think, for the whole team.
Okay. Women head to Lake Louise. The men come down to Vail Beaver Creek.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, the women, as you say, the speed event there. Unfortunately, minus Lindsay Vonn. Lindsay, who had an accident in training in Copper Mountain, which rules her out of this weekend. This week's race is up in Lake Louise, which really is a shame. Lake Louise, known as Lake Lindsay because of her spectacular results there. But as you say, the men now cross over, wave at the women as they pass them by on their way down to Vail Beaver Creek. And we've got an incredible weekend to look forward to there. Very, very good snow out in Beaver Creek. We're looking forward to a spectacular race weekend.
So is Lindsay out?
Lindsay's out. She's not for the season. No, she announced after her injury that she wouldn't be able to make Lake Louise. But she's already posting images on Instagram of her training very hard and getting back to it. So, no, she's not out for the season. She's just out for that Lake Lindsay event.
Okay. Anything else?
No, I think that's it. Thank you very much. And I hope everybody has a great week.
Okay. Tom, thanks. KPCW News Time now 8:50. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Well, when Deer Valley opens for the season December 8th, the resort will welcome a new event. For years, it's been the Celebrity Ski Classic. This year, it's the inaugural Shred for Red, a benefit for the Utah chapter of the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. In the studio, I've got Olympian Brian Fletcher, a survivor of leukemia, Dr. Robert Wynn, his wife, is also a survivor, and he wrote a book about that. He also serves as medical director for Deer Valley Resort. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. Thanks
good
for having
to
us.
See you, Leslie.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, the first time the event is being held. Brian, you want to give us a little bit of background on it?
Yeah, so I've been kind of involved with LLS for a little while. I've done team and training and a few other events that they've had over the years, and I started talking with Stacy, and I was like, you know, there isn't an event that has my two passions, which is skiing and fundraising for the LLS. So we kind of started brainstorming, and with the help of Dr. Wynn over here, we came up with a new event called Shred for Red that will incorporate skiing and having some fun.
Okay, so you've been a part of the organization of it then, Winnie?
I was lucky enough to get my two favorite organizations together to connect them. Obviously, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, which I have a great relationship with because of all that they do to help blood cancer patients, and then Deer Valley, who I've been fortunate enough to be their medical director since they opened a long time ago. And you know, Deer Valley graciously and generously came up with doing this opening day event, and it's going to be really something special and fun.
Okay, so tell us how it works. I mean, anybody can participate if they...
Yeah, anybody can participate. You can sign up as an individual or sign up with teams up to 8 people. And it's $200 is the fundraising minimum for an individual, $100 for youth 12 and under. And basically, once you hit that minimum, you'll be invited to the event. You'll get a ski pass for the day at Deer Valley, and then also the après ski party following the ski day event. And on the mountain, as you're skiing with your team, there'll be on-mountain challenges that you can go and do. So it's kind of a fun way to explore the resort and get to interact with the people on the resort and do some different ski challenges.
And one of the things Brian forgot to tell you is that there are going to be 11 Olympians there who will be skiing with the various teams and people. And for people who aren't very good skiers like me, that should be something extra special.
Yeah, so the Olympians will go for the top fundraising teams. And so that's a little extra incentive, and they'll be skiing with you throughout the day. And great opportunity for you or your team to get a picture with an Olympian.
So it's more of like a scavenger hunt or a treasure hunt or something like that, as opposed to Alpine racing's out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Not necessarily racing. There's going to be, we have like the Leukemia and Lymphoma Blood Drop, which is their logo. There'll be signs like that all over the mountain that you can go and get pictures with. There's going to be challenges like get a picture with a ski patroller with the Shred for Red pin on. Different events like that where they're kind of fun and creative. And then one of the cool things about it is you'll be able to share your photos on Instagram and kind of promote. And then at the end of the day at the après party, we'll have some awards for the teams that can get all the challenges.
And though it isn't a race per se, the race corps, Deer Valley, is kindly opening for the event. And they reported that they had made the snow for it long before the storm came. So it should be good for those people who do want to take a run down the race course.
Okay. So how does somebody register?
So you can register. You can go to www.crowdrise/shredforred. And you can also go to the Leukemia and Lymphoma website, the Utah chapter, and find it there. Or you can text shredforred to 41411.
Okay. Do you have a fundraising goal?
Well, so far we've raised about $49,000, so we're well on our way. And we don't have a specific goal, being that this is the first inaugural event, but we're hoping that it'll continue to expand and we can raise quite a bit more money.
And I would like to add that we have some great sponsors besides Deer Valley's overwhelming generosity. The St. Regis has also been great to us. And I'm really happy to report that my employer, Intermountain Healthcare, has recently become a platinum sponsor. So we've got some great sponsors, and I think we're going to raise a lot of money to that really will help blood cancer research. You may or may not be aware that, I guess last year or maybe it was the year before, out of the 18 drugs that were released by the Federal Drug Administration to help blood cancer patients, 15 of them were supported by the research that events like this happen. And leukemia is leukemia and all the other blood cancers are very serious diseases, and someone is affected every 3 minutes. And 35% of all child cancer is blood cancer. So this is going to be a fun event, and the nice thing is it's also going to help all those patients and hopefully eradicate blood cancers in our lifetime.
Yeah. Maybe you can talk a little bit about just how things have changed, or not much. I mean, Brian, it's been what?
It's been
20 years?
26 years since I was diagnosed, give or take. And yeah, it's definitely changed a lot. I mean, when I went through it, there was kind of one standard path that everybody had to go on. Definitely a rough treatment. And since then, things have gotten quite a bit better. And obviously, Winnie can explain on that a little bit more, but it has been quite the journey for, especially for acute lymphoblastic leukemia, which is what I had. I think the percentage and the survival rates have gone up fairly dramatically in the last 20 years.
Yeah, they're over 94% for his particular type of cancer. I'll give you a personal example to let you know why I'm so passionate about this. When my wife Nancy was diagnosed, and I asked the doctor to tell me, doctor to doctor, what were her chances? He told me that she wouldn't last the week. Her immune system was so badly broken, he feared that she would get an infection and die quite rapidly. But we got lucky that when she was admitted to the hospital, the FDA had just released a new drug that prevented the mouth ulcers that cancer patients get. And she did not get any of those ulcers and therefore did not have a portal for germs to go into her body. and she survived. And again, that's the kind of thing, these new drugs that come out can make that big a difference. I attribute her survival just to that drug to get her through that first very rough period.
Yeah. And at this point, do we even know what causes it? Luck of the draw?
I was hoping you could tell me that.
Yeah, but there
are a lot of different causes. There are some things we do know about, but most of it is unknown, and that's what they're working on.
Yeah. Okay. Again, it's happening opening day, Saturday, December 8th. Again, the website people can
register? Yeah, so it's www.crowdrise.com/shredforred. And a couple other things I just want to touch on quick. So the top fundraising teams will also be invited to a VIP dinner on December 7th at the St. Regis. That'll be an exciting event. And yeah, I think it'll be family friendly and all abilities are welcome. And then the other thing is Deer Valley has offered discount lodging for individuals who want to make a staycation out of it, come for the weekend. So you can definitely take advantage of the nice hotel rooms we have up there.
Okay. Guys, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Good to see you. I wish it was on the bike trail.
Brian Fletcher and Dr. Robert Wynn again with Shred for the Red. You're listening.